us. That does it for our show, our website, democracynow.org. Happy birthday, Rob Young. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 7:59, and coming up next is Positively Revolting.
Hi, I'm Ed Melnick. In solidarity with San Francisco's 50-year anniversary of the Summer of Love, I'm inviting you to join me for a two-hour special Monday sampler on August 7th.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on Trampoline.
From the 1967 music scene, music from artists like Janis Joplin, the Jefferson Airplane, the Beatles, and many others will be featured. Join me for 2 hours to tune in, turn on, and drop out. That's Monday, August 7th, 2 to 4 p.m.
If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale. Your unwanted books, records, and DVDs are treasures to someone else. Help them find new homes while raising money for your community radio station, KBOO. Bring them to KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. We are accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Friday, August 11th. Please, no home-recorded cassettes, VHS tapes, or mold. The KBOO Book and Record Sale will be held on Saturday, August 19th. If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email Ani at volunteer@kboo.org or phone her at 503-231-8032, extension 213.
This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from Beloved, the open-air sacred art and music festival happening Friday, August 11th to Monday the 14th, now celebrating 10 years, located in an Oregon coastal forest venue about 1 hour west of Corvallis. Beloved Festival weaves together a weekend-long musical story, plus workshops, yoga, craft and food vendors, and camping. Tickets and info at belovedfestival.com.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought,
and good morning, good morning. The time is about 2 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, your very own community radio station. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And this morning we are here with you talking about the importance of creating international solidarity amongst workers. And to help us do that, we have a few folks joining us in the conversation. And we have Eloise Erickson from United Students Against Sweatshops by phone. Good morning, Eloise.
Good morning. So happy to be on.
Yay. Good morning, Eloise. We're happy to hear you. We also have Russell Lum from the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign.
Say hello, Russell.
Hi there.
And we also have Paige Shell Sperling from Portland Central American Solidarity Committee.
Good morning.
And we are talking mostly we will be talking about a day of action that's called for tomorrow, a global day of action against Nike and the things that have led up to that. But we also want to check in and give an update on some other workers that you may have heard about on KBOO or elsewhere, and those are the GM workers in Columbia. And the reason why we are looking at this is because, of course, what affects one affects us all, right? And as long as As long as we are not educating each other about each other's struggles and supporting each other's efforts to, maintain a decent life with good working conditions, safe working conditions, and enough compensation to, say, feed your family, then really what we're doing is creating conditions where corporate greed ensures that there's a race to the bottom and that we all lose out. So it's really one of those issues. Solidarity for all helps us all. Lacking that education, lacking that knowledge, and lacking connection with each other, well, allows us all to be exploited. And we see that people of color in nations that so-called developing nations, otherwise known as colonies for transnational corporations, they take it the hardest. And we are here to say no. We are here to say no to all of that. So thank you, dear listeners, for joining us this morning. That's a little preview of what we will be talking about over the next hour. And so with that, I want to start off with just a little update again on the conditions of GM workers in Colombia. And Paige, as I understand it, this is an ongoing issue around the workers' ability to organize and defend their own interests.
Yeah, that's right, Ani. So the Portland Central America Solidarity Committee has been working with these injured workers who were dismissed from General Motors. They've been camped out just about 6 years. August 2nd is their six-year anniversary of being in tents in front of the U.S. Embassy, protesting basically for their rights to have General Motors comply with the law. So we had
just to underscore that, to have General Motors comply with the law. It's not even that they're asking for new laws or reinforcements. They're asking just for, this corporation to behave within the bounds of law.
Yeah, that's right. So basically, the assembly plant down in Colombia is one that's very dangerous. And a lot of times when people think about a dangerous plant, they're thinking about accidents. And while accidents do happen, I think that the bigger issue down there is actually that the conditions themselves create injuries. They create like herniated discs and rotator cuff injuries to the hands and the arms and the elbows. And they leave these workers disabled. So essentially what General
Motors... No benefits, no help.
Exactly. Right. What General Motors has done, instead of making the assembly plant one that would not produce injuries, they've just developed a sophisticated system of identifying the injured workers and then dismissing them before the worker even really realizes the state of their health. So they have a medical clinic that's inside of the plant. They send the workers there. The doctors there tell them, oh, we think that you slept wrong. Like, your neck is sore because you slept wrong, not because you're lifting these very heavy things, not because you're doing repetitive movements and working, 10 to 14 hours a day, 6 days a week.
How cunning.
Yeah. And then what General Motors was doing at the time that these workers were in there, they actually had the medical records and the workers' records together, so that the administrators could look at both, and then they could send like a red flag to labor relations, and then they could get that person out the door just as soon as their injuries were discovered.
And so the workers are attempting to organize, and of course organizing is also a very dangerous act.
Yeah, that's right. So these workers have received death threats. They have had like their vehicle has been stolen. They've had death threats like left inside the vehicle before it was stolen. They're followed on the street. They're surveilled. People show up at their house and take pictures of them. They've been afraid to send their kids to school. I mean, these are workers that are very invested in trying to make the situation better. And, they're out there in front of basically the U.S. government's installation in Colombia. They're asking the U.S. government to make this U.S. corporation comply with the law. It's ridiculous. There's a Colombia Free Trade Agreement that says that basic labor rights will be respected. And our question is, if these workers that are working for a U.S. company and are protesting very visibly and have had like U.S. Congress people come down and visit their tent encampment, and they've been there for 6 years, they've gone through hunger strikes where they stitched their lips closed, went for weeks at a time without eating, if they can't get justice, who's going to get justice? Like everything, the U.S. government owned General Motors after the bailout.
Yeah.
So if they can't get justice, who will?
A fine question. And you know, I think that really does underscore, I first became aware of the struggle when the workers took the action of sewing their lips together during the hunger strike, because that was such a graphic and shocking thing to do. But it's really, again, it's a graphic and shocking thing to do in response to such injustices being perpetrated against the workers every day. As you pointed out, and I want to make sure this is underscored, the workers are being injured not as the results of industrial accidents, but actually as the result of normal work conditions, because that is how little GM cares and really treats workers as a disposable resource.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, one difference that there is between U.S. working conditions and Colombian working conditions, a lot of U.S. auto workers will develop some injuries over the course of a 30-year career. But these workers are developing disabling injuries over the course of 4 to 7 years. It's just happening much, much quicker.
Right, right. All right, well, let's look at some other workers in factories, in manufacturing places, specifically working with Nike. Eloise. Good morning, Eloise. You still there?
Yeah.
Good morning. I'm wanting to maybe paint a little picture for our listeners about the conditions that that workers are facing in the non-union Nike shops. If you could just sort of highlight some of the conditions that workers around the world are facing in manufacturing concerns.
Yeah. So we've got a couple of reports from the Workers' Rights Consortium, which Nike has since 2015 barred from access to their factories. But from a couple of those reports, we see instances of severe human rights violations consisting of and not limited to repeated firing and systematic firing of pregnant women, mass faintings, and wage theft. So workers are treated with little dignity, are not allowed to bring ice or water into the factories, and are oftentimes not given sufficient seating or chairs to work with. So these workers are facing severe conditions and are oftentimes not given the ability to speak out about them without severe consequences.
And primarily we are talking about women and girls in the workforce, yeah?
Exactly, yes.
And what countries?
So the most recent report that those conditions were coming from was a factory in Hanoi, Vietnam. But we see these conditions all over the place. Cambodia has a strong union where garment workers will speak out about indignities. Honduras is currently facing mass contract pulling from Nike factories. So this union factory in Honduras has 400 workers out of work right now because Nike is pulling orders from them. So we've got Honduras, we've got Vietnam, we've got Cambodia, and then also El Salvador and China are a couple of those countries.
And this is looking back into casting our minds back to the 90s, there was such a lot of attention focused on Nike and Nike sweatshops and the fact that, you know, people in this country were paying $100 in 1990 dollars for a pair of sneakers that were being produced through the exploitation of workers for very minimal cost. And then looking at the Nike campus being built here, and this interesting, interestingly disparate way of looking at Nike workers. There are the people that actually manufacture the shoes, and then there's Nike, one of the biggest companies, one of the biggest employers in Oregon, where we see this beautiful, clean campus, and we see workers in the design and marketing part of the industry being treated relatively well. And there's a whole lot of the public face, I guess, where we focused very hard on Nike. Nike seemed to make some concessions, allowed in some independent monitoring, switched to union shops, and are now sort of backsliding. Seems to be one way of looking at it. But I'm wondering, did they ever actually clean up their act? Or was it a whole lot of marketing?
Yeah, it seems very ironic that we've got these two sides of Nike. We see in Portland, Nike campus, and like all these people wearing crisp clothing and spending tons of money on Nike products. But we know what's on the other side of those factories' doors, which is extreme injustice. And it's just ironic that Nike has claimed to come so far. Their campaign right now is equality, and they're putting equality on shirts, but not giving their workers quality or even quality of life or the ability to feed their children.
Wow, they've just broken irony once again.
Yeah. So they're trying to turn back the clock on 20 years of crucial labor rights work. And we find that ironic, and we're going to keep knocking on their door until they actually take accountability for their actions.
It seems symptomatic with all kinds of things that have, in all manner of corporate things, that there are the right words and the wrong actions being
exactly.
taken.
And Nike is the master of that marketing scheme.
They started it, I think. Doesn't it seem that way?
I don't know if they started it. Certainly they were
an early adopter. Well, because they've had it for a long time, right.
They're pretty darn good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Russell, thank you for joining us as well this morning. We are looking at this International Day of Action. You're with the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign. What is the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign doing around this issue?
Well, we're glad to be keeping track of the costs of the corporate model and the costs of what the largest corporations in the world do, which is expand their powers. Companies like Nike are knocking down the doors of policymakers for international trade policy, and the things that the largest corporations do with the most far-reaching impact are in the area of trade policy. And so basically, through immense lobbying power, through being a big employer in district, for example, here in Oregon, in Beaverton, using lobbying power to sweeten deals for themselves. The Oregon Fair Trade Campaign is looking trade agreement by trade agreement, but not to neglect the specific solidarity struggles that occur in these other countries, and with which we have free trade agreements, which supposedly have labor standards. So I want to point out that, Paige said it, the United States has a free trade agreement with Colombia, with a supposedly adequate list of labor protections. But what the GM subsidiary in Colombia does is illegal. What Nike has done in terms of pulling production from facilities where workers have begun to organize is illegal. And the existing protections in these free trade agreements are inadequate. We're talking about, for instance, in Guatemala, where in one case, the United States stood on the right side and for 9 years litigated against the country of Guatemala from within the provisions of the Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA. The United States said, you know what, we're suing you under CAFTA, and 9 years of litigation, and the tribunal that decides these things, the trade attorneys who decide these things, ruled in favor of Guatemala. And what's going on there is Guatemala is arguing, you know what, you can say that here we are not enforcing our own labor protections, but prove that it's trade related. Prove that the violations that companies are doing in Honduras, in Guatemala, is related to trade. And that's the bar that these trade agreements set. And after 9 years of litigation, and the trade agreement panel ruled in favor of Guatemala, and that's how difficult it would be to say, hey, GM subsidiary in Colombia, honor the standards of the free trade agreement. Well, the existing standards don't work. Mm-hmm. And that's something that has to change when we talk about NAFTA's renegotiation. And that's something that has to change when we talk about which international entity. Is it going to be a free trade agreement? Is it going to protect Honduran workers from, say, being mass fired?
Mm. And what is the definition of free trade?
I think to me that's really part of the nexus.
That's so huge.
Because really, is it free trade we want? We want fair trade. And that's, again, looking at trade that respects the rights of workers around the world. And I, you know, this is all against a backdrop as well. If we cast our minds back about 5 years, we realized that Nike was given a 30-year tax break to keep their headquarters in Oregon because, gosh, they're such a great corporation. They're such a great employer. We have to keep them here. They are, after all, like I just said a few minutes ago, one of Oregon's largest employers. And so
we wouldn't want them contributing to infrastructure or education.
Goodness, maintaining roads or, yeah. just because they made $25 billion in profits in 2013 doesn't mean they should actually pay their fair share of taxes in the state of Oregon. Right. And while we're...
No, we'll sell the Elliott State Forest. Never mind.
Details. So, obviously, we have a lot to discuss this morning, and we want to invite you, dear listeners, to join us. Please give us a call at 503-231-8187 is the number if you would like to join in this conversation. If you have questions or comments, please do join us, 503-231-8187. You can also follow along on Facebook. You can like our page on Facebook, Positively Revolting. And in the Twitterverse, you can find us at Positive Revolt. So, with all that said, let's look at the International Day of Action that is tomorrow. Eloise, some details about tomorrow's action. It is at 1:30 in Portland.
So at 1:30, we're going to be assembling at the MLK Nike Community Store, and we are going to be picketing in front of the store as well as flyering within the store. And we're going to deliver a letter to the manager with our demands, which is that Nike stop pulling production from union factories and that they respect independent monitoring. So, we're going to be out there, and everybody who is available should come out because we want those bodies, and we want to show Nike that Portland wants to keep them accountable, and we believe in labor rights, not just in our city.
Absolutely. And this is an international day of action, so it's not just in Portland, but it is actually in a number of cities around the country and around the world.
Right, we've got 25 cities internationally organizing, which is amazing. The other cities that are organizing other countries that are organizing include the UK, China, Honduras, and El Salvador, and also Bangladesh.
And so, again, tomorrow, 1:30, the Nike store on MLK. Is a place that people are meeting up. Beyond this one day of action, let's talk about some ongoing ways that people can be involved in international worker solidarity. Eloise, you are with a group called Students United Against Sweatshops. Is that
United Students Against Sweatshops? Yeah.
It was orders of words. Yeah. what is, obviously your group focuses on labor conditions. One of the little discussions we were having right before we went on was, what can people do who want to support good working conditions? It seems like pretty much if you're buying new clothes, you're supporting sweatshop labor. It seems like over and again, most large manufacturers are using exploited labor. And it's sort of, again, we're in a race for the bottom as people have turned attention elsewhere for a little while. Can you think of some exceptions to this? Are there corporations where you're like, wow, we actually don't need to worry about them right now? Are there corporations that you would suggest are doing better in this area?
We could talk about replacements, like other companies that are selling athletic wear that do allow the Workers' Rights Consortium into their factories. There's still probably issues within those corporations, but really what we need to do is keep Nike accountable. Nike is the biggest and the baddest company in the game, and it's important that we work internationally with garment workers who want to organize and unionize and fight back. And we as students at USAS believe that international solidarity is the way to go, and knocking on Nike's doors and not letting them sleep until they take accountability and show their workers respect. And that's really the most important thing that we can do right now, aside from our consumer behavior, keep like other brands. I mean, it's
where do you go these days?
It's significant. It's significant to be an ethical consumer, but really there is no ethical consumption against capitalism. We know that under mm-hmm. capitalism. So at USAS we're working with garment workers and union leaders worldwide to end this global exploitation.
Do you feel that by targeting Nike and by, well, if we can get them to make some concessions that will kind of possibly trickle down, so to speak, to the other manufacturers? Russell is nodding his head yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, that sounds true to me in the sense that
because it's so
Nike,
wide. It's so, you know, mm-hmm. Everyone, all manufacturers do it overseas.
Sure. And Eloise said it. Nike is the biggest and baddest in the
right.
game. And it's been mentioned, you know, Nike led the way in trying to refashion themselves as sustainable and trying to refashion themselves as more equitable. Sure, they led the way in lip service. And we're talking about a company that puts equality and then the swoosh on their shirts, whereas in 2016, their chief executive and their board chair took home $46 million in compensation. So it rings false, doesn't it? And when
yes,
if Nike were to put some of its actions and put some of its operations behind its marketing, behind its corporate social responsibility face, that would matter, and there would be an impact for the rest of the companies in apparel and in shoemaking.
It always gets me. This is how we do empire in America. It is a corporate empire. It is not the old-fashioned, though of course there was the East India Company, which sort of started it all with Britain, but we
It was the Netherlands. Well, it's Dutch East India. Anyway, I don't need to give my sermon on the history of capitalism at the moment. It's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. but we do empire by corporations and for people who don't think that that's who rules the country. That's why it's just phenomenally difficult for folks to organize it all. I hear that in China people are starting to organize. Is that true? I mean, I know we're doing South America right now, and that's sort of off topic, but it's just like
I think what you're getting to is the organizing efforts of workers around the world.
Around the world, because it's people are good. That's manufacturing is going to stay around the world. So what we need to do is so folks around the world need to be paid correct wages and have decent conditions. They all need Costco working conditions, which is one of the few places here also that has it. Paige has something to say.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, from my perspective, working on the GM campaign for the last 5 years, it really, a big piece of that empire is that those workers that are overseas, they do not have access to being able to pressure the CEO and the corporate leadership. So, you know, with General Motors, it's been extremely important to go to the shareholders meeting, to get into those meetings, to apply pressure, you know, to the CEO and stuff. Well, with the Nike campaign, I mean, Nike's located here. So this is, you know, this is our struggle in those terms.
Absolutely. I feel like as Oregonians, we do have a little extra impetus, a little extra obligation to really shine that light pretty brightly on Nike's practices because, well, they are our own backyard, at least in terms of their marketing and design operations. You know, they have these great ads. Nike has great ads, right? No one's going to argue with that. They've got great ads all about, oh, gee, the empowerment of the individual, how that individual finds their core strength, how Nike's right there with them. And it's this wonderful image. And then we hear about the conditions of the workers that are making those shoes, passing out in, factories with no ventilation and no access to the water or seating, as Eloise was detailing earlier. And, well, it's just such a huge dichotomy between the marketing and the ads and the image and the reality of what it takes to make that product with the profit margins that Nike would like to maintain. And the profit margins that are additionally supported by the tax cuts that the state of Oregon gives them. I mean, all the way around, people lose, Nike wins, I think is sort of how that goes. So much nodding going on in the studio. And I'm just going to go ahead and assume, Eloise, you two are nodding on the phone.
I actually am nodding, yes.
See, there we go. And so I want to go ahead and encourage our listeners again to join in the conversation. I bet everyone else is nodding, too. That's the thing. It makes for quiet radio, though. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. You can also comment, of course, on our Facebook page, where you can find us, Positively Revolting. You can also find a link to this action. Again, tomorrow's action at the Nike store at 1:30, the Nike Factory store on MLK in Northeast Portland. And what other, just looking ahead at knowing one day of action really isn't going to do it, though we would like it to fix everything. People that are interested in actually working towards fair trade, in working towards worker solidarity, whether it's GM, whether it's Nike, whether it's, you know, oh my gosh, there are so many corporations that start jumping into my mind. You know, I mean, there's, again, when it comes to clothing manufacture, we have seen that conditions are dire around the world and that there is very little that is currently made in the U.S. We could ponder why that is. So how are those of us who are concerned, how do we get involved in the longer struggle? Let's go to you, Russell, Oregon Fair Trade Campaign.
Well, I mean, my quick answer is get involved right now. Turn your attention right now towards the North American Free Trade Agreement. Just in the same way that Nike kind of wrote the book on producing overseas and finding the lowest labor conditions and lowest wages that they could pay overseas, just in the same way they designed the model in a sense. The North American Free Trade Agreement is the Paragon Free Trade Agreement on which CAFTA was based, on which the Columbia Free Trade Agreement was based. And for the first time in its history, NAFTA is being looked at for changes. I don't know if you would call it very purposed or accidental, but here we are 23 years into the NAFTA period for Mexico, U.S., and Canada. And Trump is renegotiating it with Mexico and with Canada. And that starts in the middle of August. And these three countries, by the end of 2017, want to have a new NAFTA written and approved and sent out to their various legislative chambers.
That's pretty fast. You guys are going to have... All right, so there's a NAFTA town hall on Thursday, August 10th, correct?
There is. That is the way for Portlanders, people close to Portland, to plug into what is going on with the NAFTA politics right now, whether that agreement is shaping up to prioritize people and the planet, or whether it is shaping up to open the door for more corporate power grabs, the same way that NAFTA did in the early 90s. And so join us on August 10th here in Portland at AFSCME Hall, the building of AFSCME Council 75. That would be a Thursday, and it's at 7:30 p.m.
6025 East Burnside.
Exactly. And what we intend to do at the NAFTA Town Hall is say, here's where the politics seem to be trending for a Trump administration that honestly has a lot of debate behind closed doors over which trade policy to endorse, a more protectionist or a more multinational corporate sort of favorable trade policy. And it seems the multinational corporates are in Trump's ear as now and in the ear of the USTR, the United States Trade Representative. And so will NAFTA get worse? Or will we get in there and re-understand NAFTA as a document of international labor and environmental standards? So those politics are very much in the air right now, and something that we are driving at to not let, basically not let Oregon, after all, be something that approved the worsening of a very bad legacy. So join us at an event where we'll educate and get a little interactive and get a little political around NAFTA at this time.
Education is so important. I mean, when we talk about trade agreements, I know for myself, especially when I first started looking at trade agreements in the 90s around NAFTA, around GATT, my eyes would glaze over and I'd be like, oh man, that is so dry. Like, I don't know stuff like AI. I came to this from sort of an environmentalist and anti-war perspective. And then I realized, oh, well, you know, corporate practices actually tie into all of these other issues, and the free trade is super important to look at, but I would glaze over. And so it's so important to have these meetings of education and reaching out to actually explain what all the alphabet soup means and actually how that ties into every other struggle we're involved with, because it does, in fact. And so that's something we're going to talk more about. But let's go ahead and talk to Daniel right now. Daniel, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking me on. Love your insight of your guests. Very bright, and I love your show. It's a jungle out there, and Upton Sinclair wrote it best in about the 1930s stockyards and about our fight for labor laws here domestically. We can laugh at them right now, and let alone laugh at them internationally. When we talk about Nike, I very much agree with you, but I think it is the model of all the corporations, like the gentleman said, in regards to the writing the policies of supply and logistics for this, making this stuff happen. But, you know, it is the culture of thyself where Nike breeds. You know, it's, you know, literally about yourself, and very much it doesn't go down the supply chain to see how that shoe is produced. Michael Jordan said, hey, he would go over in the 90s, like you said, during the pinnacle of putting the full court press on them. Michael Jordan said he would go over there and check out the sweatshops, you know? You better believe that his agent squashed that. But back in the day when we had them pinned and they were making changes, now what I would think is U.S. is positioned in a kind of a third position role under European Union or the huge China, so that all the companies are repositioning themselves in regards to negotiations, because U.S. is losing themselves as a powerhouse. And in closing, Nike, to me, is the case point model of everything that is wrong with the United States in regards to its whole entire supply, and how it's kind of marketed and not really represented on the other side of things, where people are committing suicide, living in, like I said, 1930 conditions of union rights, or no union laws, no labor laws, and they get married one day and they can't even take the day off the next day to go to have a wedding, you know? Or they lose their position in line. It is reality of old times back then, and I can laugh at it now. If our unions are being dissolved here, what's going to happen out there? Now, I'll end it. Love your show. First-time caller. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Daniel. Thanks for your call this morning. 503-231-8187, the number to call. If you, too, would like to join us, as Daniel just has, anyone have any response to Daniel? Russell.
Well, just to say that, Daniel's remark, I think it brings to the fore how these corporations, which do their manufacturing at the lowest common denominator, and Ani, I think, started off the show with a sort of, multinational colonialism. These companies, they do seem to divide up the world in how they see different populations, right? Mm-hmm. This part of the world, will be our workforce and will never afford our products. And this other part of the world will see our glossy ads and will be our market. Mm-hmm. And there's a racial justice claim in all of that too. Mm-hmm. And there's an important way of saying, you know, like, here is how we're going to be international instead. We're going to be international instead by respecting rights. Mm-hmm. And what needs to happen is looking at the world through a lens of solidarity, which this show is directly addressing, instead of a lens of saying, yeah, well, you folks are our working supply and are completely disposable, and then on this side of the border, the people who get to waltz through a factory store, it is almost funny that that Nike calls their outlets factory stores.
Yeah, it is. Isn't it?
Yes, the so-called first world consumers who march through the Nike factory stores. Like the caller was saying, like Michael Jordan would not see a factory, and couldn't stand to see it if we did.
Yeah, and in fact, what they see are incredible eye-catching displays with jumbo screens showing all manner of graphics that are quite pleasing, and you know, athletes and everything just seems so clean and so very healthy. And of course, that is just the antithesis of what workers around the world face in the manufacturing of their products. We have a couple other callers. I want to get to them. Lynn has something to add.
Well, I was just going to ask Eloise about the contacts with university clothing.
Yeah.
Because that's, once again, they've just broken irony, but go ahead. Please tell us about that.
So yeah, that's one of the main focuses that we take on in United Students Against Sweatshops is students are organizing at the universities to cut contracts with Nike to basically take money away from them to show them that we are not going to stand for this terrible working conditions in the factories that are producing our university apparel. It just goes right against the mission of most universities. For example, my university, Oregon State, is a little bit behind the times because Oregon actually had a legislation that lasted for a few years that barred universities from affiliating with this independent monitoring agency. And my school just yesterday affiliated with that Workers' Rights Consortium. And it was the first school in Oregon. So you can see that in Oregon, we're behind the times in our labor rights at the university level. So we're really excited at OSU that now we have independent monitors going into our garment factories, but still that doesn't include Nike. That includes other companies like Adidas, Under Armour, you know. But at the university level, we're trying to work with garment workers internationally who work in university apparel factories specifically, and not just community stores or not just like regular Nike gear, because it's putting a name on our university of not supporting international labor rights when we're wearing a Nike sweatshirt that says OSU on it, and that swoosh was sewn in a factory where women are victims of these human rights violations. Broken another irony.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and talk to Marcus. Good morning, Marcus. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I joined your conversation a little late. I turned on the radio about 10 minutes ago, and I heard you guys talking about Nike. And I actually used to work for the world headquarters for their catering department. I was contracted through another company. And, like, I mean, it's obvious how Nike treats people overseas and everything, but we got to look at the big picture here and how they treat people here right in Oregon. I mean, they had a custodial department that had been working for Nike for over 20 years, pretty much since the beginning of the world headquarters and everything, and just recently they've decided to opt them out and contract them through another company. So all these folks that have been working there for so long have been losing everything that they've earned through Nike like the whole time they've been working here.
Interesting, isn't it, how there somebody sits around in a room and decides how to cut costs, and it's always people.
I know, it's crazy, and these are all people who have been very loyal to the company, you know, have been keeping secrets and everything from, because they work in their office buildings where everything is really, you know, high security and you can't take photos. And, I mean, it's just crazy. Like, and these are people from the United States, and then you also have people working in their off-site buildings there in Beaverton that come from other countries that aren't working directly for Nike, but they're working for a contracted company.
Yeah. Yeah, most of their workers are the creative workers are contract workers.
Exactly. I mean, they borrow these people for a few months at a time for like a certain project, kind of steal their ideas, and they're like, well, thanks, send you on your way now. Back usually to places like India, and there are other people, people are from Southeast Asia as well.
Well, and again, the announcement that they are eliminating 1,400 jobs in a restructure, and those are jobs here. While maintaining that 30-year tax break.
And CEOs making how many?
And corporate welfare, yeah. You know, is alive and well, and this is how we do business under late-stage capitalism.
It's a very sad thing to see.
Yeah, Marques, thank you very much for your call this morning.
No, thank you, guys.
Take care. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You are listening to KABU, your community radio station. This is Positively Revolting. I want to, I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we have with us, so many people. We have Eloise Erickson from United Students Against Sweatshops by phone this morning, joining us from Corvallis. We have Russell Lum from Oregon Fair Trade Campaign. And we have Paige Shell Sperling from Portland Central American Solidarity Committee, all in this conversation about creating, in fact, good conditions for workers, about educating each other about worker struggles and trade agreements, and about an International Day of Action that is tomorrow, called Against Nike. And that is tomorrow, again, meeting at 1:30 at the Nike Factory Store on MLK in Northeast Portland. I want to let folks know, coming up on KABU this morning at 9 o'clock, One Land, Many Voices looks at the conditions in Gaza after the UN Coordinator for Human Aid said the area is unlivable and does not have the resources for human survival. At 10 o'clock, you'll hear Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, the Pacific Underground talks about the labor movement with organizer Dee Pei Wu. And we thank you, KABU members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can take care of that situation right now by going to kboo.fm and clicking the donate button, because, in fact, we rely on you for our support. That is right. This is listener-supported, volunteer-powered community radio, and we all have an important part to play. 503-231-8187, the number to call to join us on the air this morning, just like Francis has done. Good morning, Francis. You're on the air.
Hi. I appreciate all the work you guys are doing to address this issue, and I just am now going to throw another perspective in the mix. Starbucks, Sprint, Whole Foods, a whole bunch of companies use prison labor, and that's literally slave labor, and that's right here in our own country. And but I know that there have been prisoners who have attempted to organize, and they have brought attention. Some of them went on strike, and probably at a risk to their well-being to even do that while they're incarcerated. And I wonder if you guys do anything to address that issue, as far as all the slave labor that's being used right here in our own country.
It's a great question, Francis. Thanks. Russell, is that something that that the Fair Trade Campaign has looked at all?
Haven't picked it up, but certainly aware that that it's scandalous how prison labor does sort of fly under the radar. And yeah, not altogether pleased to say that haven't worked on that issue yet.
All right. Well, there's a lot. There's a lot of companies. It's pretty amazing if you look it up. There's, you know, as I said, Whole Foods, Sprint, Starbucks, they all use prison labor for different aspects of their productions. And also, at some point, I hope people will discussed, and probably you guys have, how when the coup occurred in Honduras, how that affected everything in that country, and how our country pretty much turned the other way and pretended like we didn't see when it was occurring. So, anyway, carry on with what you're doing.
Frances, thank you so much for raising that other aspect. I mean, that is something that we really
do need to look at. That's an amazing exploitation of labor.
It absolutely
is. That happens right now, right here in this country. All right, you guys take care.
Right on. Thank you so much. Yeah, it is, again, labor issues. It goes pretty deep. It's international. It's certainly domestic as well. And yeah, aspects of slavery. They are with us. They are alive and well. And that is the prison industrial complex and the school to prison pipeline for so many communities, especially communities of color. Lynn, you have your hand up.
Well, if we want to look at some, I hesitate to say positive thing, this has made us realize that labor issues are international at this particular time. There is not this whole America first Nazi propaganda thing is completely ridiculous, because at this point, everyone who labors throughout the world need to be in solidarity, not just one country. And Paige, you got your line.
Yeah. So I have a little piece of positive news that I've been holding on to this whole time, and I think it's just really illustrative of how much difference we can make. So relating to the General Motors workers, we got a very good piece of news a week ago today. We heard that General Motors, which was ordered by the courts to reinstate not the workers we're working with, but some workers that had been dismissed for injuries that they had a year ago, they were ordered to reinstate those workers. They have not done it. They're supposed to be immediately reinstated from July 6th. So a week ago, the judge went ahead and said that the president of GM Colmotores, that's the GM subsidiary in Colombia, needs to go to jail for 3 days, and GM needs to pay a fine. And this is following an investigation from the Ministry of Labor, which levied a $250,000 fine against General Motors for these dismissals of injured workers. So I want to put that out there, because a lot of that was actually a result of us writing letters to these judges, expressing concern, pointing out the pattern of this abuse. So it's just very important to get involved in these issues, and I really encourage you to join one of the organizations working on it, whether you're a student, and that's the United Students Against Sweatshops, or you are local to Oregon and you want to work with the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign. Jobs with Justice is involved, and also the Portland Central America Solidarity Committee.
Excellent. And let's go ahead, and we are, gosh, just about...
We're running out of
show. 6 minutes. 6 minutes away from the end of time this morning. Let's go ahead and sneak John in. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just wondering, are you aware of any magazines that have articles referring to what you're talking about, like Harper's or Mother Jones, that one could look at?
Many.
I have some resources for the Nike sweatshops. Information. There's a couple websites that you could go to read up on this. Workersrights.org is the Workers' Rights Consortium website, where they post reports on the factories that they're able to get access on. NikeSweatshops.org is highlighting issues around Nike sweatshops and talks about the campaigns that we're working on internationally. And USAS.org is a good resource to see what campaigns United Students Against Sweatshops is working on, and all of those websites have really good articles and information.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for your call this morning. And I just want to make sure that we have ways to get a hold of all of y'all, because I'm hoping that our listeners are inspired to jump in, because really, we are the front lines of protecting our rights and protecting the rights of others around the world. If we can't provide our solidarity from the belly of the beast, then really no one has a fighting chance. So to get a hold, let's start with you, Eloise, on the phone. How do people get a hold of United Students Against Sweatshops?
But a good site is USAF.org. You can also go to the Facebook event that we have for this International Solidarity Campaign, which is, I believe, on the show notes for this episode.
Yes.
The Facebook page, and I am the host of that Facebook page. So if you're able to get a link through there, then you could contact me. And also just find United Students Against Sweatshops on Facebook.
Right on. And Russell, how can people get a hold of you in the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign?
Right. Well, so much is happening because we're in the middle of a NAFTA campaign. And so we're updating the public all the time. People who check our website can get good information. That's www.oregonfairtrade.org. I can be reached at Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, at OregonFairTrade.org.
And Paige, for people interested in PCASC, Portland Central American Solidarity Committee.
Well, I'd say to everybody, come out tomorrow at 1:30 because we're all going to be there. So you can meet us face-to-face. That'd be great. To reach us at PCASC, you can just email me, Paige, P-A-I-G-E, at PCASC, PCASC.net.
And tomorrow's action, one more time, where and when?
At 1:30 at the MLK store in Portland, MLK Community Nike store. Just come meet us outside and we'll be picketing. We've got plenty of signs. We've got a big old banner, so you won't be able to miss us.
And to really emphasize again that this is one of those issues that weaves its way through just about everything else we talk about, from immigration, because really the free trade agreements are a huge factor in people trying to seek lives that are sustainable by immigrating. That's hugely connected. Also, environmental laws, as we look at war and actually how we keep the world safe for capitalism. That's these things are all interconnected. And it's so very important that we remain aware of each other's struggles. So I really want to thank all of you for joining us this morning. Any final words?
I just like to encourage all y'all who are still thinking about coming out that this is a really important day of action, and we're going to have the opportunity to make waves in this struggle for workers' rights. We're going to be at Nike and demanding that they respect independent monitoring and give work back to union factories. This is something that affects everyone, whether or not you buy Nike or not. If you respect human rights and you want other people to be able to live their lives with dignity, then come out tomorrow and show solidarity and come meet us and socialize and get involved with your local activism.
Eloise, thank you so much. We'll end it there. Thank you for joining us by phone. And thanks to Russell and Paige for joining us here in the studio this morning. Stay tuned at 9 o'clock, One Land, Many Voices. Stay tuned to KBOO, your community radio station, all day long.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is always looking for ways people can work with us and support us. KBOO has a wish list, and we'd love help getting some of those items donated. Some things on our list include a color printer, digital recorders, a pop-up canopy, dishwashing detergent, brooms and mops, or services like roofing, plumbing, and electrical work. Please contact station co-manager Delphine at del@kboo.org or go to kboo.fm/kboo's wishlist for more information about supporting your favorite community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:59 a.m. Coming up at 9, One Land, Many Voices looks at the conditions in Gaza after the UN Coordinator for Human Aid said the area is unlivable and doesn't have the resources for human survival. At 10, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and we thank KPFA in Berkeley and the Pacifica Radio Foundation for sharing that with us. At 11, Pacific Underground talks about the labor movement with organizer Dee Pei Wu. And thanks KBOO members for all of your generous support. For those passive listeners who have not yet made the hard left turn into active membership in the KBOO Foundation, you can remedy that at kboo.fm/give. And now, One Land, Many Voices. But first, I am honored, privileged, as well as contractually obligated to remind you that this program is made possible by KBOO members and support from Beloved, the open-air sacred art and music festival happening Friday, August 11th to Monday the 14th, now celebrating 10 years, located at an Oregon coastal forest venue about 1 hour west of Corvallis. Beloved Festival weaves together a weekend-long musical story, plus workshops, yoga, craft and food vendors, and camping. Tickets and info at belovedfestival.com. And now, this time for sure,